Okay, what do you think of when you think of a school lunch?
Like mozzarella sticks and tomato sauce and like broccoli. But like gross. It's not fulfilling and I feel gross after.
Most people would have a similar response to this question. School lunches are known for being reheated, smelly, and unhealthy. School lunches across the country have been funded by the National School Lunch Program since 1946. And today, 95,000 schools and institutions serve school meals to 29.6 million students each day. Though the National School Lunch Program, or NSLP as I'll refer to it, has been active for 70 years, it falls short in accommodating needs for students and school districts with the constraints of federal budgets. And the main difficulty that the program is having is balancing the tight budget set by the USDA with providing nutritious and appealing foods for students. Many of them can fall through the cracks and not be fed. They can either receive too many or too little calories, and some students might not be able to afford school meals, yet just miss the cutoff for free or reduced lunch. They might even choose not to apply for the program due to the stigma surrounding it and the attention it would harbor. Serving food in schools produces a lot of waste, especially when students are served unappealing food. So, how did we get to this stereotypical unappealing school lunch? The NSLP wasn't the first occurrence of lunch being provided in schools. It began on a smaller scale at the local level. Penny lunches began being served in 1908 when a teacher noticed undernourished students and decided to do something about it. She noticed that it was affecting their performance. So by 1913, 46 U.S. cities had some kind of meal program in schools. And when the National School Lunch Act was passed in 1946, 60,000 schools and 8 million students were participating in some kind of meal program. And these programs were mostly run independently by women's clubs, parent-teacher organizations, or other community organizations. And this meant that there was a lot of variety in both the quality and quantity of these meals, as it wasn't yet federally mandated or funded. So this often meant that, as we've seen throughout history, the people who really needed the help weren't getting it. They didn't have those community support systems, the parent-teacher organizations that was needed to organize these school meals. And it wasn't just the lack of food, but the safety of food that presented another issue, because before the passing of the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Meat Inspection Act in 1906, food was generally unsafe and full of dangerous additives. And before being provided lunch in school, kids would just pick up what they could find on the way, which would not only be unhealthy, but usually dangerous. At schools, meals were simple, but they were effective. They utilized the surplus farm foods, such as powdered milk, canned vegetables, and processed cheese. And the school lunch service employees cooked meals mostly from scratch. In 1918, school attendance was required by law in all states, which kind of blurred the boundary between the home and state. School lunch was among other changes being made to the public school system. Parents, teachers, and administrators pointed out that states should be making sure school environments are safe and healthy if they mandate attendance. And if they are causing health problems, it's their responsibility to fix it. Hungry and malnourished children aren't able to take advantage of their education. And though concrete research didn't exist at the time, teachers noticed that hungry or malnourished students were more likely to be tardy, irritable, absent, and succumb more easily to illness. It's better to provide for the health of the children early in their life so that they can stay healthy and take full advantage of their education and better their futures. Today, the early 20th century brought industrialization of agriculture as a response to growing cities and demand for cheap food and lots of it. Farming transitioned from small and family-owned to large-scale monocrops. This was supported by new farming technologies like tractors, combines, and synthetic fertilizers. The goal of industrial farming was, and is, high yield. When the Great Depression hit, the high yield remained, but the consumer base disappeared. In response, the USA passed farm bills in the 1930s, which took some of that surplus and put it towards school lunches, as well as established crop security insurance for farmers. In an effort to alleviate lunch costs for school districts, as well as support U.S. agriculture, in 1946, President Truman created the NSLP, or National School Lunch Program, which includes the following five requirements which still exist today. 1. Meals must meet minimum nutritional standards. 2. Lunches must be available to low-income students at no cost or reduced price without discrimination. 3. The program must be nonprofit. 4. School lunch must use surplus commodities to the extent practical. And 5. Schools must report expenditures and receipts to the state educational agencies. That's from USDA Report 7.
Here's a clip from 1966 film It Happens Every Noon.
The price of a lunch is low. An average of less than 30 cents for those who can afford it. Even lower for those who can't. Free of charge for the child of a needy family. Lunches are designed to be nutritious, attractive, and well-balanced. Type A, they're called.
By 1960, food technology was improving, making processed and heat-and-serve meals cheap and readily available. Frozen meals save on both labor and time for school districts, allowing them to stay within the tight budget provided by the NSLP. Small farmers are crowded out and they can no longer easily get their surplus in use. Essentially, as we see today in these so-called gross school lunches, processed food hasn't gone away, and if anything, its presence is stronger. Most of the problems with the NSLP today, like in the past, are caused by a lack of funding. Just this March, the Trump administration, quote, slashed hundreds of millions of dollars in funding that helps schools buy food from local farms in a move that one food service director said was, quote, devastating. That's from an article from Education Week by Brooke Schultz. When a problem is solved in the way that the National School Lunch Program did for hungry kids from 1946 and beyond, it's not just solved once. There's been a series of amendments that have been made to this act, which have mostly been successful in feeding these kids, but clearly there are still problems that continue to arise and need to be solved, especially when the livelihoods and education of children are at stake.